Hi guys, today Paul from ImproveAndHaveFun.com and I discuss the movie Into the Wild, starring Emil Hirsch and directed by Sean Penn. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the Reseller Niche Podcast, a show for e-commerce buyers and sellers where we investigate unique items being bought and sold and show you how research equals knowledge equals profit.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to another episode of the Reseller Niche Podcast. I'm here with my main man, Paul, from ImproveAndHaveFun.com. How's it going, Paul?
Very cool, Mo. Today is May the 4th. May the 4th be with you, celebrating all things Star Wars, but we are not talking about Star Wars today, definitely.
We are not. I thought about that this week, actually. I'm like, you know what? We should have, but okay, maybe some other time. But I know we've been away for a little bit, but this has been a topic. I think I listed this twice already. But we are going to be talking about a movie and then kind of what that movie kind of talks about, a movie called Into the Wild. Wait, did I just say that? Is it In the Wild or Into the Wild?
No, Into the Wild. You're right.
This is how bad I am today. Into the Wild. And it was kind of the reason I was thinking about doing a show about this wasn't even much about the movie, even though I love the movie. It was more of the idea behind it, and we'll get into what happens and, you know, the whole journey that takes place. But it was more about the mindset of somebody that would want to even do something like this. So, brief synopsis on the movie, I guess.
Well, you're coming in and out.
Paul, do you want to give a brief background?
You're coming.
Sorry.
That's all right. You're coming in and out a little bit. Your audio is, your video is okay. Your audio is coming in and out.
All right. Let me see if I can mute that. All right. Hopefully that did something. But hopefully you can still hear me.
I can hear you.
As a background. Okay. Cool. Did you want to give them a background on just a brief idea of what the movie takes? I mean, it's pretty simple, really, a concept for this movie.
Oh, you want me to? I thought you were going to give the synopsis. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. I know this was your choice.
Yes. Basically, we've got the idea of a movie here behind. It's about a college kid, basically. It starts off with him just literally at his graduation. Like, you see him run on the stage, get his diploma and everything. His parents there, sister's there. So it looks like, oh, this is cool. You know, successful kid. He seems smart. Apparently did pretty well. And the gist behind the whole movie is kind of somebody that's kind of coming to realization that this isn't the type of life he wants. You know, like, he's about to finish this big chapter in his life, obviously college. You know, it's 4-year degree. Okay, I got this. Now I'm going to get the job, the 9-to-5, the wife, the kids, the dog, whatever. And he is coming, and it looks like he's already come to realization a long time before this, that this is not what he wants to do at all. And you see throughout this movie, it's kind of I wouldn't call this a coming of age movie, because it kind of seems like he's already pretty mature. It's a coming of, realization that this is not what, it's almost like a midlife crisis for, what is he, 21, 22 at the beginning of this movie?
Yeah, that's right. So, like, fresh out of college.
So he's like a kid. Yeah, fresh. And like, at the very beginning of the movie, you see a happy kid, a happy family, and then you start to see the fragments. You see, like, the mirror is, you know, maybe not 100% there. It's broken. And then they start talking about his parents' background. He has a vision of what he thinks his parents were like on their graduation day. And it shows, you know, it's like this, you know, this is tall dad. And he's like smiling, standing in front of the doors of, I don't know what college they went to, but whatever it was.
Emory University, yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess his mom, his wife, you know, his wife-to-be for his dad is standing next director, and he's talking about, oh, you know what? Whatever decision you're going to make now, he said, I'm paraphrasing here. Don't do it. Run away. He's basically thinking in his head. He's kind of indirectly telling his parents to stop right there. You know, don't move any further. Don't get married. Don't go down that road, basically. And it's kind of the beginning of the movie. It's kind of like him showing what he's going to do throughout the movie and how he's going to completely change from, like, you know, moving towards, like, I think he even mentions his grades were good enough to go to Harvard Law at the graduation dinner there. And this is all in the first 15 minutes of the movie. And, like, his dad's asking him, oh, do you still have that car? Give you a new, you still have enough, how much money do you have? We'd like to pay for the rest of your law school. And that's kind of where I think you start to see that he's a law. He refuses the car right off the bat. He says, what's wrong? He's like a, I don't know, like a 1980 Datsun or something like that.
Yeah, it was
that.
A beat up car.
And he said, what's wrong with
a
beat up
car? Yeah.
It's a beater. It's a serious beater. And he's, so then they kind of say, okay, fine. You don't want a new car. But then, you know, they ask him, obviously, how much money you have left in your college fund. He knows to the penny how much he has. It's like 24,000 something and 14 cents or so. I don't know what it is. Like, but he knew exactly what it was.
I said 23,000 or 2,300,
which is
something like that.
It was something, but whatever the number was, he knew it to the penny. That's what I recognized. And I think that was foreshadowing on what he does with that money a little bit later. And then he goes from there. And to kind of talks, he starts hearing a little bit from his sister too. Some of it him talking to her, some of it just kind of, it's like stream of consciousness. It's like she's thinking, his sister is thinking about how their parents grew up and how they have this family institution that looks great on the outside, but actually in reality, it's not so great. And we kind of get into that. So I've talked about a little bit about this, the beginning of the story. What did you think of when you first, that first 15, 20 minutes or so?
Mo, your audio is definitely still coming in and out. I don't know if there's any other devices in your, like in your immediate vicinity that are using the internet. Maybe you want to like put them on airplane mode or something like that. That way it won't like suck your internet away. You know what I mean? But I thought I had seen this movie, you know, just like it, so it could help your particular stream right here, you know? But I thought I'd seen this movie before, but I hadn't. And then when I looked it up on Netflix, and the running time was like 2 hours and 48 minutes. I was like, oh, dude, this is brutal. This is going to be 2 hours and 48 minutes. Because it's always like that when you want to watch something, when you're going to watch something that you don't know anything about. But this movie was fantastic. As a whole, this movie was really emotional. It was romantic in a way. Romantic, not in a sense of a relationship way, but in what this young man wanted to go do. I think that that's very romantic in itself. And I related to a few things in this movie, for sure. Now, you were giving the setup of the beginning of the movie, Mo. You already see that his course of action, he already decided. By the time the movie begins and he's graduating from college, he already knew what he was going to go do. He already knew, like, it was already in his mind. Like, the movie doesn't tell that to you, but at that point when they're having that like, kind of congratulatory, you know, kind of graduation dinner, like the parents are like, and it wasn't like they were arguing, not at all. The parents are very cordial to him. They're like, we're gonna get you a new car, and so what school are you gonna go to? And he's just like, you know, like, I'm cool with my car, and I don't know what I'm gonna do just yet. But in the back of his mind, you already know he knows what he's gonna go do. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
So I found that very interesting. And I don't know if you mentioned it, Mo, but this is based on a true story. Like, this actually happened, you know? This is the kid's name was Christopher McCandless, and he ended up doing what we're going to go ahead and discuss further in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then this movie kind of hits you in waves, and the way it's, and I believe it's directed by Sean Penn.
It is.
And
definitely.
I'm blanking on the characters, on the actor's name. It's ML.
Emil Hirsch. He's Speed
Racer. Emil Hirsch. That's right. Yeah. Because I remember him for some movies in the past. But they really do a good job of progressing. And like I said, this is a coming of age story, but it's different. It's a coming of, I think of it as a kind of coming of realization, because this is like a, this is a child. I mean, he's 21, 22 throughout the entire movie. So he's just at the cusp of manhood, whatever. And that's kind of where it starts. And like Paul said, it starts pretty friendly. You know, his parents are offering him a car and he says no. And then they're like, oh, okay, that's fine. Oh, you're going to Harvard. That's great. So it sounds like it's good on the outset. The family unit they have here looks perfect, you know. And so when it starts, then you kind of start to see what first thing, because I've seen this a few times. So the first thing, I was trying to look for different things the second time I watched. So they're sitting in a restaurant, looks like an Applebee's or something like that. And all of a sudden you see them, the parents are there with the daughter, who's probably like 2-3 years younger than her brother. And then he walks in a couple minutes late and they talk. And then a couple minutes later, you see like a rush of like 20 other graduates, I guess, and they run over to the bar section. And you kind of see, hey, Paul, how's it going? Oh, Paul in the chat too. Paul, and then as kind of like a, you know, an influx of kids, obviously they just graduated, they're happy. And then you kind of see like the dad just go over to the waiter or waitress. Oh, they're going to stay in the bar section, right? They're not going to come over here. We're going to be celebrating. And then I didn't really think of anything of that the first time, but you kind of see like it's his front. That's his image. That's his kind of like, we need to remain in this mode. Like my son, he's on a Harvard track for law school or whatever it is. He's not like them. Like kind of, you kind of get to see that a little bit. And then
that's halfway through, yeah.
That, I mean, I didn't think of that the first time I watched it, but then after that dinner, you start to hear from his sister. I think it's his sister. Starts talking about what he actually does in the next, because they kind of talk about basically he's doesn't actually apply to law school. He, whatever money he has, whatever those thousands of dollars that he has in his college fund, instead of, you know, leaving in the bank, he leaves it to Oxfam, I think, which is, I guess, you know, it's a charity organization. I guess they're in the UK. And he writes to the penny.
And he burns some of it as well, though, doesn't he?
I think he keeps a little bit of cash. And then basically he gives away all his possessions other than his car. And the last thing you see him doing is like he kind of drives away, exactly what you said. He drives to the middle of, I don't even know where it is. I think it was in Arizona. I think it started.
Yeah, like a desert. Look like
somewhere
a desert.
Out there. Yeah. So he's got this beater. He drives out to like some random part of a freeway highway, parks on the side, basically in the dirt. And you see him, like you said, burning his IDs and his cash, whatever cash he has, he's burning it. And his IDs. And this is, one thing I guess we should mention is this is set in 1991, I think it is.
Yes. Yes. In the early 1990s, that's exactly right.
Yeah. So there is, you know, there's no cell phones here, obviously. And so nothing like that. And he's ready to, like, it looks like, and his sister actually explains it. Basically, she
like narrates the movie.
Exactly. And then she kind of goes on to say about how in high school, when he got that car 4 years earlier, how the second he got it, he spent the entire summer just driving around the country. So it's kind of like something he's envisioned for a while. And it kind of, at the beginning of the beginning of the movie is after that bar scene, the graduation dinner scene, you see his sister narrates that he's left. He's on a trip of some kind, a journey of some kind. He's never going to make it to college. He even kind of, he alludes to the fact that he's going to law school just to buy himself time. Like his parents have been sending him letters and then they end up showing up at his, I don't know where that is. I guess, is that maybe his undergraduate dorm room or whatever, or his apartment complex. And he had moved out like a month earlier or something like that. So that's the beginning of the movie. It's like, okay, he's on some kind of trip, some kind of journey, got a backpack, no cash, no IDs. And he just wants to go out there with his, I don't know, notebook and his, I don't know.
His books. And his books.
Yeah, his books.
He just wants to kind of backpack it, you know, and his ultimate destination is to reach Alaska. you know, Alaska. Like, he just wants to get away from everything and anyone and any kind of communication. And Mo, you stop me, like, if I'm kind of giving
go ahead.
Already. The main driver of his kind of, like, according to the movie, of his wanting to get away from his family is because of the divorce and kind of, like, there was some form of abuse as well in between, like, the mother and the father, and they just kind of fell out of love, and it really affected him in a particular way where he just kind of wanted to escape. He didn't care, like, about, not that he didn't care. He loved his family, I'm sure, but he just wanted to escape. He didn't care, like, if we stayed in communication or not. He just was like, the moment I can get out of here, I'm out of here. You know what I'm saying? And it's to escape, like I said, the pain that he felt with his parents' divorce. And I can relate to that because, you know, my parents have been divorced, and it's really affected me and my relationships with women and with people in general. You know what I'm saying? So right there on that level, there's another thing we're going to discuss that really, like, kind of sat with me that was in this movie. But that was the first thing that deeply resonated with me in watching this movie, you know, and, like, which I did not know. I thought, like I told you, I saw this movie. I had not.
Yeah.
And that really resonated with me. But Mo, if you want to take it from there.
No. And then, so basically you got this, you start to see that through narration of his sister mainly, about how they talk about the parents and how on the onset, you know, his dad was like some brilliant scientist and his mother was like
he really worked for the CIA or something.
Really, like, they're high up there people and they have this business, and how it's actually not what it looked like on the outside, how by the time they started making money, they had already started fighting, and how I guess probably the biggest thing that hurt him and his sister the most is that you find out that his dad, I guess when they had both him and his sister, his dad was still married to somebody else and actually had another family. So that obviously can cause a lot of turmoil. No,
yeah, dude, 100%. Because, like, while you're talking, Mo, I the reason why I keep looking away, because
I'm looking
at the Wikipedia page just to kind of, you know, and just like you said, I'll read it, like, right off of Wikipedia. 2 years earlier, in May 1990, McCandless graduates with high honors from Emory University, what we were discussing, but is shown to have become disenchanted with modern society after discovering he and his sister Corrine were born out of wedlock when his father was married to another woman. I just wanted to
And then I think that kind of, like, I don't know what it was, it kind of made them look like they're like 11, 12 years old or whatever, younger when they found this out. That, okay, it kind of, like, okay, this is the reason. This is why they're fighting. They're not fighting. Like, he even calls himself, okay, we are the bastard children. That's how they refer to themselves. And it's kind of like, okay, it's just us and them. And, like, you even, there's clips of the parents are, like, fighting, and, like, it gets pretty violent and, you know. So anyways, but the thing with the parents is that they don't separate. They don't break up. They kind of just, like, threaten to get divorced. Like, okay, go, you know, we're going to get divorced. So they do it then. And it never happens. And that kind of dragged.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. And like, it's, according to the movie, as time progresses, it's kind of like his going missing by choice actually brings them closer together, because they have this common bond, like the parents now, that they were always fighting and everything. But Christopher McCandless in the movie, that's the name of the real person who did this, like, once he goes missing, it brings them closer together, because now they're unified in a, you know, like, where is our son? We love him. Doesn't he come back?
Oh, yeah. And then the mother, I've seen her in another movie recently. It was like a horror movie. And she does a really good job of kind of playing the, going from somebody that's kind of statuesque and emotionless to kind of, you see the emotion through these events of him kind of go disappearing, and, like you said, basically bonding in a certain way over the fact that their son has gone missing. So you see that kind of in bits and pieces throughout the movie.
You're saying that the actress's name is Marcia Gay Harden, and a movie where she kind of goes from one extreme to another is The Mist with Stephen King, that horror movie, which is fantastic, and I recommend it. Like, I've heard the TV show is the shits, but The movie is incredible. Yeah, you know, so it's called The Mist, came out in 2007.
Yeah, she goes, that's it, from, right there.
Yeah, she like, it goes from like a villain almost to like this extremist character, and then it's very interesting. But Mo, continue. I'm sorry.
On a side note, that she's a, I don't know what they call it. You ever seen, they have like whole, they had a documentary on this, actors and actresses that you know their face but you don't know their name. That's, I kind of see her as, I don't know if she's typecast, but she's does a really good job to playing that type of role though. So anyways, but so go where he is, Candless has dumped his car in Arizona, and then the parents obviously went to his apartment. They found out from the old landlord that he's not there anymore, hasn't been there since, I don't know, a month or two before. And then the sister hands them a stack of letters that she had been holding. So anything that it all been returned, and she would just basically been stockpiling all the letters that never actually got to him.
So did she know? Did she know that he was doing this?
It kind of alludes to the fact that she had an idea, because she talks about the trip he took when he was a senior in high school, how he went off basically for the entire summer, how she knew that he was on some kind of journey. He was going to do what he had to do, that kind of stuff. I don't think she knew specifically, but I think she kind of understood. She said, she kind of comes to the realization that this is what he has to do to get it out of his system, or whatever it is, to, you know, deal with their divorce, non-divorce, I should say. They're fighting, the parents fighting. So that's his way of dealing with it. So she hands him this stack of letters. They find out, okay, he's gone. He's been gone for how long? And it's kind of like, for the parents, it's like, okay, how do we find him? So, and it doesn't, I mean, the whole movie isn't wrapped around that. They go back to them a little bit. But the sister doesn't seem distraught. She seems unhappy that he's gone. He's not contacting her. That's the biggest one. He contacted, you hear that a couple of times. Like, he could just pick up the phone and call, you know, pretend like if the parents pick up, I could hang up. So that's her big thing. If he just contacted me, I wouldn't care what he did. So the beginning part, the journey, he literally just gets a backpack on and just walks. He starts walking. So he's got boots and a, you know, backpack, and that's it. And then I think the first, it's in chapters, like I said. So the beginning part is he's walking. You see him kind of enjoying it. It's like a new thing for him. Like, wow, open fields. He's like shaving in like the sprinklers and like, and playing with horses and that kind of thing.
Meeting friends along the way. It's almost like this magical journey little bit, right? The way the movie kind of unravels. But there's people that he meets along his way, very interesting people. He meets like some hippies, and he meets like this one guy. He meets different people that give him jobs. So he's just trying to make a little bit of money. Yes. He travels on the train. Like, he's homeless, basically, you know? But he's happy. He's with his books. Yeah. He's writing. And some of the authors that he's reading, please correct me if I'm wrong, like Jack Kerouac, or like the authors that he's reading is kind of like promoting this life that he wants to live, in the sense of like that he just wants to kind of go on a grand adventure. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And one of the lines that gets me in the movie, where he talks about, and this one, like I said, this is the one that really like spoke to me. He said, this is near the end, where he's like, he's with Hal Holbrook. And he's like kind of like speaking with him. He meets this older man that really like takes a liking to him.
Yeah,
kind of takes care of him. But he says that the core of man's spirit comes from new experiences. And I love that so much, because like, being a single man, I have no kids, no girlfriend by choice. New experiences are kind of what like lift me up, or like may break the boredom, or may break my loneliness, which I feel sometimes.
Yeah.
And I have friends I can talk to, and intimacy I can have with family and friends. I've mentioned before, I'm not shy to admit it, like, I do pay for sex. I have no issue with that, you know. So when I have this boredom, when I have this loneliness that creeps up more often than not, you know, I'm always looking for new experiences to go ahead and kind of fill that void a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So, but also going on new adventures, or going to new places, or going to new destinations I haven't been to, is really fulfilling as well. So I really connected with that in terms of what Chris McCandless says in the movie, definitely.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then touching on a little bit of what you said there, the people that he meets during, and we're not going to go through every single section in detail, but like, like I said, it's in chapters. I think it was like four or five chapters. The first group, it's like a hippie couple. And it's kind of like they had lost a son. I don't know, he ran off or they, for whatever reason, their son had left. And that the wife...
And hadn't communicated with them. I'm sorry to cut you off.
That's exactly right. And she had...
And for that reason, like, especially I feel with that hippie couple, the way the movie, you know, kind of progresses, it's a reminder of why it is that Christopher McCandless has left. And it's because of his big pain of like the thing with the parents.
Yes. You know,
that is like the driving force of what drives him to want to get to Alaska and just want to disconnect from the world. That is the main driver. Nothing like there's other things I'm sure, like, you know, he's probably read his books and then he's like, oh, society's kind of like not great, you know, but it's that one emotional thing, that one emotional stake of the parents and the divorce and their fighting is what drives him away.
Absolutely. And then it's weird the way they have it set up is that he kind of in that part of the movie kind of plays, he's like their son in a certain way. For that little part,
the hippie woman is projecting on him, like, exactly. You know, he's so young, and he's like, you know, yeah.
He looks just like, I don't even know what her son's name was, but like, yeah, oh, he looks just like, oh, he reminds me so much of him. And then it even comes full circle because he starts off by seeing them, and after like that one night, he goes off. He like leaves them, and he meets them up again later towards the last three quarters of the movie. So it kind of comes full circle for her. So she kind of has, it's in a way that like, okay, that's not my son, but somebody that was in that role came back to me. So for her, it was kind of like semi-closure, even though it wasn't her real son. So in a way. And then, so that's kind of like the first group of people he meets. The second group of people, I shouldn't really say group, he meets, he goes and works, I think he's in Iowa. I don't know what state it is. But
yeah, he went to work at a fast food place, yeah.
Yeah, he's in the cornfields. And then
and he meets Vince Vaughn. That's what he meets Vince Vaughn.
And Vince Vaughn's character I liked a lot. I mean, I'm a big fan of Vince Vaughn anyway. But I liked his character a lot. He kind of plays like the uncle role or the older brother role. He's got this business, he's really loud, kind of, he's got a lot of friends, he's got this corn, like he, like the first scene where they're together, he's literally like, they're cutting, they're like, they're this giant tractor, and Vince Vaughn's sitting next to him showing him how to use it, and he's all right, go ahead, slaps him on the shoulder and says, all right, finish up, I'll see you in a couple hours, and he literally jumps out of the thing and he's like, okay, you just finish up, and he's all, finish up what? And he's all, no, you can do it. And that's it. So he's kind of like that uncle, the younger uncle type role, like the, I don't know, the Uncle Jesse. But
yeah, I said it's a magical journey where he's meeting magical characters, and that's kind of the appeal of the movie. And yes. Tell me again, Mo. Not like to wrap it up or nothing, but tell me again, why is it that you chose this movie? Because I think it pertains to that.
To be honest, it's the whole. I think the part that hits me, so let's jump to the end. So I'll tell you why. Because at the end of this movie, like we said, his whole vision was to go to Alaska, be in the wild by himself, nothing but him and his thoughts and, you know, living off the land. No, you know, he's almost a Luddite, like no, you know, they didn't have cell phones or anything, but nothing, just him, the land and his thoughts. So that, and I did a paper on this when I was in college. That idea always intrigued me. Even though I am the least outdoorsy type person in the world, I've barely been camping. I wouldn't call it camping. And then like fishing, camping, I'm not like that kind of person at all. But that idea that you could literally go out and just be out there with your thoughts and leave whatever this is, whatever we, you know, this is our society. We're in society here, right? You know, we've got cars and cell phones and internet and jobs and whatever, leaving that 100%. And some people might think of that as leaving responsibility, you know, oh, so you just don't want to be responsible. He, at this point, like you said, was 21, 22, no wife, no kids, no job. So it's not like he's quitting anything, but he wanted to find himself. So the idea of finding yourself, it's a very, I don't know, beatnik hippie kind of type thing, you know, like you said, Kerouac, like Call of the Wild. These are the kinds of books he's reading. So that's kind of what drew me to it. And I'm going to say the second part of this thought when we talk about the ending, because that's the second reason for this. And I don't want to spoil the ending if we're not quite there yet. But how about you? What did you think?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what motivated this, I'm assuming, like we were talking about, like your previous host on this podcast, and yeah. how he lives now kind of in an RV with his wife, and he yeah. travels around. And for a period of time, that was romantic to me in the sense, because yeah. I don't even have a driver's license, but like kind of like van dwelling and like, you know, so I can have my life, but instead of having an apartment, I'll live out of a van and like kind of save my money, and then I can go travel around and stuff like that. Because that's one thing I have not done much in my life. I haven't really traveled very much, you know?
Yeah.
And it's because it's like where I live, there's always something cool to go do for the most part. You know what yeah. I'm saying? So, but that is very romantic to me, even now as I get older. Hey, what's up, Peace
Russ,
Train Depot?
How's it going, definitely. Russ?
And what's up, Russ? Russ is the one that actually
he's the inspiration for this show, to be honest.
Exactly.
I'll be honest, because we were talking about having you on here. I should have like reached out to you more, but I mean, Russ, just so you know, just like Paul said, he was in an RV. He's done everything from every type of like 9 to 5 you can think of, and now he literally built his home in Missouri from the ground up. So he's kind of done everything you talk about. See, exactly. I am Alexander. See, he even knows what we're talking about. So you're the inspiration for this show right here. This is something I have never done. Like I said, it's like Paul said, we're romanticizing this idea. I don't think I'll be honest. I don't think I'll ever even come close to any of the things he does in this movie or that Russ has done. But that's the reason I picked this. It's kind of like, wow, someone can actually do that. Building, yeah. The most building I've done is with Lego. So, I mean.
There you go. No, but like getting to what happens to Mr. McCandless in the end, you know, there's a whole bunch of woulda, coulda, shoulda, right? But when you were talking before, Mo, I just think that if he prepped himself, or like he maybe took 2 years to learn like survival skills and live out in the wild, that he would have like, still been alive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hi guys, shameless plug section here. We'd love to have you join our reselling group called the Reseller Niche Help Group on Facebook. A lot of great resellers there. Also, if it's possible, if you could leave us a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, you can find these podcasts in video form on YouTube. We'd love to have you join us there so you can see some of the products we go through and see some of the people we're interviewing. And if you could possibly subscribe, that would be the kicker. Thanks so much for listening.
I think it was for lack of preparation yes. that happened to him, what happened to him. But Mo, tell us what happened to Mr.
Okay,
McCann.
So I'm going to try and make this so he's cornfield. Basically, that part is him kind of growing up a little bit. He earns money. So his whole thing is, I'm going to need to earn enough so I have the supplies to survive in Alaska. So then that job ends. He leaves. Vince Vaughn gets arrested. So that kind of ends that. And then he moves on. I believe after that, he ends up going, like he learns how to kayak. Apparently, he has a fear of water. And that comes back. That's big foreshadowing for the end of the movie. So, and he just basically says, he goes to some kind of office and he asks, you know, how do I get onto the river? Like, I don't know if they call it docking or, so anyways, and this is 1991, I think it was. So they say, well, you can either pay a tour guide $2,000 or you can get on a waiting list and you can do this in 2003. So I remember him saying 12 years. And then, so anyways, he says, forget that. Gets his own kayak, his backpack, and literally just finds a spot and goes on the river. So then,
which I love, because this part of this journey, yes. and that's another reinforcement to me, which he never mentions in the movie, but it's kind of like going ahead and doing the things that scare you. and the things that, you know, you're like, oh, I'm like, I'm, and like he overcame his fear of water and he just said, dude, whatever, I'm gonna go ahead, and I'm like, to himself, I'm just gonna jump in the river and go, dude, I'm not gonna be worried about you, even though it looked dangerous. But a lot of the things that he did look very dangerous, like traveling in trains and jumping into the kayak. So I'm sorry, we'll continue.
So he gets on the river. He meets some, I believe they're Danish, a Danish couple. They're from like outer space, it seems like. But I mean, they're very friendly, very happy, very free about, like, they're not wearing anything. They're cooking hot dogs in the middle of nowhere. And they're half baked, literally. So he meets them. And that meeting is like 45 minutes long because he's getting chased by some kind of boat police. Takes the kayak, goes all the way down to Mexico, comes back through canals back to LA, I guess. And that's kind of where there's a junction right there. He comes back to LA and he almost feels like, you know, they kind of allude to the fact that he's going to end this. Like, okay, I've had enough. This is done. Goes to a homeless shelter, asks for a bed, and then he gets the keys or whatever for a locker, dumps his stuff there, and he's going to spend the night there. Goes out, he's sitting on the street, and he looks through the window of a bar, and he sees someone that he could relate to, that he sees himself in the window. And he's got a nice haircut and suit, like he's, you know, a yuppie, not a hippie. And I think something just clicks. He's like, okay, that's it. No, I'm on a mission here. What am I doing? Goes and gives back the keys to the locker at the homeless shelter. And at this point, they're calling him Alexander Supertramp, like Russ said. And then he just takes off. That's it. He's on no. And he gets back on the river. And then he goes, I believe that's when he goes to, I'm blanking here. This is kind of how he goes
Mexico.
Down.
I think he goes like to Mexico.
And then he goes to the slabs, right? Like to where he kind of comes full circle. Because he's in L.A., so I think that's the, whatever they call it, the slabs. They have this place called the slabs, which is kind of south of LA, all the way by Mexico. Yeah. And it's a former army base or military base. And I guess just the way the land formed, it's just slabs of cement now. So a lot of people just live there. There's no real city or anything. They have their own kind of society in a sense.
Really?
So that's where, and it's a real place. If you guys want to look it up, it's called, I think it's called the Slabs, and it's a real place. And then, so that's where he meets up again with the hippie couple. And then he runs into a young girl that
Kristen Stewart
is a little bit too young for him. I think she's 16. So anyway, so then he meets them again. And this is kind of the final part of his preparation to go to Alaska. He's like sitting there. He earns a little bit of money. He works out, and he's going to Alaska. It's closure for the hippie couple. Okay, they've seen him again. And then he stays there for a little bit, takes off. And then the very last step before leaving for Alaska is he lives in the hills somewhere. I don't know where it is. It looks like the desert again. He runs into an old man, a very old man who has no wife, no kids anymore. You find out that they died years before. And then it was, I forget the guy's name. Roy, I think his name was. I think his name was Roy. But anyways, so he lives with this guy. And this kind of, this role for him, he plays kind of the role of the son again. So like Roy tells him that, you know, you come live with me. So he lives with him for like, I don't know, a month or two while he works out. And then on the day he's about to leave, Roy says, you know what, don't do this. Don't go on this trip. I can adopt you. I can be like your grandfather, your uncle, whatever you want. And he just kind of says, looks at him and says, you know what? How about we talk about this when I get back? And then, you know, you can see the stream of tears down Roy's face. And then, so long story short, he takes off for Alaska. That's it. He's got his backpack. He's got whatever supplies there are. And then that's it. All the way up. I don't know how he gets from, it kind of doesn't really show how he gets from, I don't know if it's desert somewhere, all the way up to Alaska. It just shows him at the very last stop, like getting dropped off. But yeah, that, maybe I missed that part. But basically he gets to Alaska. He goes all the way up there. Somebody drops him as far as you can there. It's springtime, so it's nice and bright again. It's kind of like, okay, this is an adventure. I can do this. And he treks, and the first thing when he's by himself is he comes to this river. And the river is, it's...
It looks pretty big.
Moving pretty fast. It's a big river. It's
pretty big, yeah.
Bad. It's a river, though. I mean, it looked like 100 feet across. And he actually was able to figure out how to get across it, just barely.
Well, you're coming in and out again.
So it's kind of like him overcoming his fear of water.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Okay, yeah, is that better? Okay. So basically, you think this is kind of him overcoming his fear of water now again, like completely. Because he, you know, gets across this river, treks up a little bit, and he finds this old school bus. It looks like a school bus or something like that. Yeah, and now he's in Alaska. Now he's by himself. There's nothing there. It's just him, his books, his backpack, and this beaten up old school bus, which I don't know how they got that bus all the way up there, by the way. But I mean, that was kind of funny. But anyways, another kind of hippie, kind of Kerouac type thing. Like he's on his bus in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but he found shelter.
So anyway, so now
he found shelter in this like, exactly. Like a city municipal bus that was just kind of like out there in the woods. You know what I mean? And I mean, it wasn't even had. I think it was just kind of like a junky bus. But he found that was like kind of his like a shelter. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Oh, hey, how's it going, Ella? So
Ella, how are you?
Okay, so now it's him, his thoughts, and a school and a bus or whatever it is, and then. So for first couple of days, it looks, you know, like he can fend for himself. He's like, I think he shoots a rabbit or something small. And then like, he's got a rifle. He's got his books on how to pick fruit and berries and all that kind of stuff. And
throughout the movie, it's also shown like it's like this little bit of like kind of survival training, not even survival training, but basically how to skin a buck, you know what I'm saying? And run a trot line in some sense from like people that he meets along his way.
Yes, absolutely. And I did not know that Slab City's become overrun now with drugs. So like, it's a real place. Wow. Yeah. But yeah, that's crazy. So anyway, and throughout the movie, I'm kind of telling this in order. It doesn't go in order. Like his trip to Alaska, the reason you don't really see how is because it will show like the beginning part with him and the hippies, and then it shows him going to Alaska. It kind of goes back and forth, jumps back and forth a little bit. So that's why that we're not telling us, it's not in chronological order exactly. But anyway, so long story short, he's up there and things don't go well and he wants to leave. And I'm skipping a lot of parts here, but when he goes to leave, he thinks that he has figured out how. Like he knows how to do everything, but like there's a part where like he kills a moose and he's not able to save the meat and he starts to get frustrated. So this is all bleeding to him. Like, okay, I'm getting scared. I'm lonely. He writes the word lonely and he wants to leave.
And also
so he tries to leave.
He's having trouble like even finding more game to kill, to eat. Like and this is according to like the movie. This is also according, because I did a little research, because like I said, the movie really affected me when I saw it, like that he just had trouble finding game as well. Like there would be long periods of time where he just couldn't find anything. That's why he started to like more like pick berries and pick you know, pick on little plants and flowers to eat and stuff like that, because the wildlife wasn't hitting as much as it should have been, basically, you know.
Yes, exactly. I mean, at first it felt like Oregon Trail, and then it hit home. He couldn't find anything. He was getting, like, they keep showing him in his belt. Like, he keeps having to use more and more of the belt.
Yeah, exactly. He's adjusting the belt because he's starting to just lose weight. And a big shout out to the actor, Emil Hirsch, a.k.a. Speed Racer, that he physically takes on the look. Like, you see him, like, becoming more and more famished, becoming more and more like, I'm a skinny guy. Yes. He gets even skinnier than me, you know, it looks, you know what I'm saying? So, he just starts to.
He even screams one part and he's just like, I'm hungry. He's like screaming and there's no one to scream to. You're there by yourself at this point. You know, he's hungry, he's tired, he's lonely, he's desperate. And then he makes it through the winter somehow. and it looks like springtime. So he thinks, okay, I'm gonna get out of here. It's spring. I timed this. I can leave. And it looks like for a second he's gonna be okay. So he goes back and he tries to traverse that same river that he came over. And he can see across the other side of the river where he came in, he had left a hat or like a beanie. So he knew which spot to go to. So he said, okay, this is the same spot I came over. But now this river is ridiculously aggressive. It is it was a big, huge river to begin with, but now it's an aggressive, like white water, like it's bad, rocks and everything. And he even tries. Oh my goodness, you've hitchhiked to Alaska.
He hitchhiked to Alaska.
Oh, he hitchhiked. I'm sorry. I was about to say I thought Russ did that too, but yeah. So basically, he can't cross this river. He tries. He steps into the water, nearly kills himself, and then drags himself all the way back to the bus. It takes him all night, and that's it. He's done at this point. And then the very last thing he does, unfortunately, you can kind of tell where this is going, is he's hungry. So he uses his book to go through and find berries or weeds. And he ends up picking the wrong stuff. I believe that he thought he was eating potato weeds, or he did eat potato weeds.
Yeah, it's like this wild potato thing that he eats that basically is poisonous. And it also kills his appetite. So he's already famished, and he eats these poison, like kind of like leaves and stuff. And it's already getting him and once he sees this, and it's funny because I was reflecting myself, like if I was this guy, I would probably do the same exact thing. You know what I mean? He starts to see that I've done myself in now, like I've messed up big time. You know what I'm saying? And it's a little heartbreaking because you're like on this journey with him and you're rooting for him, even though you know that he's running away from reality because he's just in pain. But once he makes this decision, and then like you start to see he, like, I guess a big shout out to Emile Hirsch. He was fantastic. He really was something else.
He really looked like Christopher McCandless too, actually.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
No, it's okay. That dog, the dog's singing now, dude. Yeah, you know what I mean?
So anyways, so he goes through, and one of the last scenes actually is, and this is part of the true story. There's a picture in the movie of him sitting in front of the bus, like the real Christopher McCandless. Really his jawline, and you can see the bone structure and everything. So they take that same shot. That's why Emile did such a good job, because he looked that skinny, looked famished. So one of the last things they say he did is took a picture of himself. I guess he had like a little box camera or something. So that's a real picture. So anyway, so that's it. He's got nothing. He's starving at this point. And he literally, one of the last scenes are, he's having flashbacks. He crawls to the little bed that he's got, and he just kind of lies down, and you kind of see the sun rise, and then it kind of shows his eyes, and he's smiling, looking at the sun, like it's almost for a second like, okay, maybe you'll be okay, but then that's it. The face freezes. It kind of freezes on his face, on his eyes, like this is it. He's looking at him and the sun, and then they pan. And you see in the middle, you just kind of see the corner of his eye, and you see nothing else, like nothing else. And that's it. Unfortunately, he dies on that bus. So spoiler alert, if you haven't seen this movie yet.
I mean, the movie's almost a decade old. I mean, and like I said, I was, anytime I see something that interests me, especially if it was a true story, I always jump on the internet right after. I'm sure I'm not exclusive to doing that.
I did the same thing.
Exactly. So a few points. Like it was like some hikers that found him, sometime later, like on the bus, basically, like, and they found his body. It was already decomposing, and it's very sad. You know what I'm saying? But also, what I read is that there was actually a little bridge just a few miles away from where he was actually staying at that he could have gotten over this water. Like I said, I just think that if he would have prepped himself, like maybe take a year or two. Like I said, woulda, shoulda, coulda, a million different ways. But if you would have taken a year or two to just like kind of really learn how to live off the land, I think he would have been all right. I think he would have still been alive, you know?
He was a smart, resourceful guy. But I think, like you said, eventually what happened was desperation took over more than anything, and loneliness. And I don't even know how he did it for that long. I wouldn't have lasted 24 hours. But I mean, he went, like you said, he was a younger guy. He'd never done this before. Exactly. His intelligence was extremely lacking. He didn't know how to shoot before. He'd never owned a gun. And you see the beginning, he's like missing things that are very close. He didn't know how to use a gun. Didn't know how to preserve the meat correctly or any of that stuff. So that's really unfortunate. I mean, like you said, I think he was smart enough, though, just from the way they described him, that he probably could have if he had, I don't know, 6 months, another year. But unfortunately,
to get from where he went to all the way to Alaska and to kind of support himself and make friends and all that along the way. Yep. I mean, the man did have some form of resourcefulness. Like, you can't even just get out of your own state. Like, if you, without no money or anything, if you don't know something, you know what I'm saying? So the man was resourceful. Just like, you know, according to the movie, like I said, I'm not a big camper. Camping is not like my thing. You know what I'm saying? But, you have to have some know-how if you're going to go into the wild. This makes me think of another, there's this guy who used to be an MMA fighter. His name was Evan Tanner. And he used to go out and just like kind of walk into the woods and like just kind of stay out there and then come back. And he did that one time and he didn't come back and he died. You know what I'm saying? And this is like not too far off from his peak of when he was like fighting. You know what I mean? So hearing this story, which I didn't even know about until I saw this movie, makes me think of it. Also, if anyone, you know, is interested in finding out more, there's a few documentaries on YouTube where it has his sister, and he actually even had more sisters. He had like three sisters altogether, but they're interviewing the sister, and the sisters actually go back to where this van is in Alaska.
Really?
And yeah, they actually go back. Like, this video is on YouTube. I was looking at it like for maybe the first 10, 15 minutes, and it's mostly like they're interviewing the sisters, but they go back to where the van is. Like, they actually take the trip out there, and they they're crying, they're crying. I'll send you the link. They're crying. They're reflecting, on their brother and the sisters going on about like the reason why he left and, you know, like kind of things that were covered in the movie, but straight from the real sister's mouth. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was very interesting.
Actually, dude. One good point here, actually, was made. The bus was pulled by tractors. Thought very common to use old buses as a hunt camp. They are built tough. That makes sense because the way they had it, it was like on the, 20 feet away from the edge, perfectly placed, around something would have had to have moved that bus. I mean, especially since it didn't even look like it had a working engine or wheels or anything. So,
but adding on to the bus, yes. I also found this out. Like I said, I just went and did a bunch of research after the movie. I saw the movie last week. Like, the bus has actually been moved because, Alaska, like the city that bus is near, a lot of hikers were going up there and getting hurt, or like just there were other hikers that have, I think have died as well trying to get to that bus because this guy became a figure of like freedom, figure of like, you know, you could break away from society like Christopher McCandless did, Alex Supertramp. So the city or like that's where the bus was near, they've actually removed the bus from that location and they put it in a museum in Alaska.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, and I'm going to, because I want to hold the time here, we'll run up the hour mark real fast. I just want to let everyone know where they can find you and all that good stuff. And then we'll end with a couple thoughts.
Definitely. And folks, we love having you on here. We start normally around 1 p.m. Eastern Standard and 10 a.m. West Coast time, you know. So just please, you know, come join us because we love having you. Definitely, big shout out to everyone in the room, Ella, Paul, Russ. Thank you guys so much for tuning in for sure. My name is Paul V. Perez. The name of my podcast is the Improve and Have Fun Podcast, and the latest episode is up right now where I discuss. Like, since we're talking about reselling, my results from selling on eBay in 2020, was it a bust or was it a boom? So please tune in for that. Five weird stories. I love talking about weird, true stories. This is one story that talks about real life underground castration. True story. And finally, there's also a mixtape. If you like, it's a true story, dude. Like I said, you got to tune in though to find more. And finally, I have a mixtape that has dancehall, Afro beats, and a bunch of other soca. So if you're into all that kind of stuff, check me out, improveandhavefun.com, definitely.
Excellent. And you know where this channel is. So I'm also on under Reseller underscore Niche on Instagram, and got a tiny little Facebook group, the Reseller Niche Help Group on Facebook.
Join the group. And,
yes. And this one I could talk about a lot more. Maybe we'll bring up the idea behind this. I'm going to watch the documentary that Paul mentioned right there. But just want to thank everyone for being here, just like Paul did. And this one, just my final thought was the reason that last picture, that last scene is what got me the most. So that's what hit me the most, to answer your question from earlier. It really, like, wow, that, I don't know what, that just that picture of him sitting in front of the bus being so skinny was the thing that hit me, and it kind of like sat with me. And I remember spending like a couple hours, just like Paul did, research Christopher McCandless.
Why?
And I first saw the movie like five, six years ago.
I want to know why. Why it stood like why did it stand with you like that? But why did it sit with you like that?
It went from like, this is a really cool thing to do, he did this, to realization of, okay, this is what really happened to him at the end. At the end, he's really, you know, he's gone. And, you know, and that kind of like, it's kind of like your worst, the worst possible scenario actually happened, and they don't sugarcoat it at all. So, like I said, it went from, oh, this is really romanticized, this is really cool, he's on his own, he's doing all this stuff, to, oh, it didn't work out. He died by himself alone in the middle of nowhere. So that, those two thoughts kind of rubbing up against each other are what it kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. One thing I couldn't stop reading about it, on the other hand, it scared the heck out of me. So the combination of those two things made me want to look him up more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like we've discussed, like he's become a figure, like a figure of like a, like freedom and travel and like kind of leave society behind, which, you know, maybe we can get Russ and discuss this with him because he may know more, but there's a large portion of our society. I mean, not like super like humongous, but there is a large group of our society that has done this, that they do live in RVs and they do go ahead and live in vans and stuff like that because they either can't afford to kind of make it on their own, or they just, there's more freedom and like I don't have to stay in one place. Yep. And the more, especially this whole situation that COVID itself and this pandemic has exposed, where one can work remotely as long as you have a good internet connection, and like this lifestyle is possible. I know we're wrapping it up now, but I just wanted to give a quick example of this. Like there's this, like, you know, I'm into the Marvel comics and the Marvel movies.
Yeah. And,
excuse me. On Disney Plus, there's this documentary where one of the pencilers that does comic books, he lives out of a van and he just travels around, and basically he'll draw on his iPad, like the pages that he has to submit. He gets to a place, submits, or maybe he already has the like internet connection on his iPad. He sends those pages in and that's it. And he lives on the road. And remote work and kind of traveling and stuff like that, I think it's going to be, you're going to see more of it.
Yeah,
I really believe that. You know, I'm always talking about the future. I love talking about the future. Yes.
You know what we're going to do? But I'm going to put a pin in this right now, because I think we'll try and get Russ on. We'll talk about this in an upcoming episode, because I want to be respectful of Paul's time here. So thank you so much for being here. So until the next one, peace. Have a good one, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Reseller Niche Podcast. Show notes and social media links are located at resellerniche.com. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on iTunes or YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.